Dinner. At about 6:30, the phone rang. Breck answered, then told his father it was Lucille Martin, his secretary. It was very unusual for Martin to interrupt Eisner at a family event.
Michael, she said, Frank is dead.
Eisner felt numb. What happened? Martin had only a few details. Wells had been killed in a helicopter crash returning from skiing in a remote area in the Nevada mountains. Only one passenger had survived. Others on the trip, including one of Wells' sons, his mountain climbing partner Dick Bass, and actor Clint Eastwood, had been in a different helicopter. Eisner said he needed a moment to collect himself. He hung up and gestured for Jane to join him outside the dining room. Conversation came to a halt. Frank is dead, he said. Jane screamed, then started crying. Eisner himself showed little emotion. My reaction in crisis has always been to set my emotions aside and to focus on the issue at hand, he has said. Roy, Patty, and their pet Labrador were returning from their weekend house in San Juan Capistrano when their car broke down, stranding them alongside the road until a truck arrived to rescue them. They, too, were late for dinner at their son Roy Patrick's house, and the meal had barely begun when Martin reached Roy. My God, Roy said. Frank is dead. Stanley Gold was in his car with his family after an early dinner when the phone rang. Are you driving? His secretary asked. Pull over. What is it? He asked, but she insisted he stop driving. I just heard from Lucille. Frank was killed in a ski accident. Gold let his head fall to the steering wheel. Wells was his best friend. When Michael Ovitz walked into his house that evening, the usual array of notes from a message pad was arrayed on the dining table. He glanced through them and saw one from M. Mr. Eisner called. Mr. Wells was killed in a helicopter crash an hour ago. Thinking of the time he'd called Eisner with the news that John Belushi had died of a drug overdose and Eisner hadn't believed him, Ovitz thought the message was a prank. He immediately picked up the phone and called Eisner. He's not dead, Ovitz said. He's dead, Michael. As usual, Eisner's first call was to Sid Bass, whom he reached at a restaurant in Aspen. Then he spoke to Gold, Roy, and Irwin Russell, his closest confidants on the board, and then Ovitz had called. With each, he discussed what immediate steps needed to be taken and the issue of succession. Roy insisted that Eisner not try to find another Wells. He was unique, Roy said. You can't clone him. The consensus was to not make any dramatic moves. Eisner called John Dreyer, head of public relations, asking him to draft a press release. He called Sandy Litvak, a sign of Litvak's growing stature in the company. He phoned other board members, the heads of Disney's various divisions, asking them to inform their staffs, and finally, at about 9:30 p.m., he called Katzenberg. The Eisners were about to set out to try to console Luann Wells. As usual, Luann had not accompanied her husband on one of his strenuous outdoor weekends. She was at their beach house in Malibu. Katzenberg suggested he come along. That was the last thing Eisner wanted, and he dismissed the idea as inappropriate. Instead, he told Katzenberg